Playing you the pop music you love on VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Mario Ritter Jr. tells us how the ongoing war in Gaza is affecting schools in the territory. Jill Robbins presents this week's Education Report. We close the show with today's lesson of the day from Jill Robbins and Andrew Smith. But first,
the new school year in the Palestinian territories officially began on Monday, but all schools in Gaza are closed after 11 months of war. There is no sign of a ceasefire. Israel gave new orders to people in the northern Gaza Strip to leave their homes. The order came after rockets were fired into Israel from Gaza. Amzaki has a son, Moataz, who is 15 years old. He was supposed to begin 10th grade. Instead, he woke up in the family's tent in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Water is more than 1 kilometer away from the tent. The mother of five told Reuters by text message, "Usually, such a day would be a day of celebration, seeing the children in the new uniform going to school and dreaming of becoming doctors and engineers. Today, all we hope is that the war ends before we lose any of them." The Palestinian Education Ministry said all Gaza schools were closed and 90% of them had been destroyed or damaged in the war. The war started after Hamas gunmen attacked Israeli towns on October 7th. Killing about 1,200 people. The UN Palestinian Aid Agency, UNRWA, operates about half of Gaza's schools. Many of them are now emergency shelters, housing thousands of displaced families. UNRWA Director of Communications, Julia Tuma, told Reuters, "The longer the children stay out of school, the more difficult it is for them to catch up on their lost learning." She added that they are then more likely to become a lost generation. They are at risk for the dangers of child marriage, child labor, and recruitment into armed groups. The Education Ministry said there are already 625,000 Gazans registered for school who would be missing classes. Another 58,000 6-year-olds should have registered to start first grade this year. Last month, the UNRWA started a back-to-learning program in 45 of its shelters. Teachers set up games, drama, arts, music, and sports activities to help with children's mental health. Nearly all of Gaza's 2.3 million people have been forced from their homes at least once. Some have had to flee 10 times. In the latest evacuation order, Israel told residents of an area in the northern Gaza Strip that they must leave their homes. Rockets had been fired from there into southern Israel the day before. The United Nations urged Palestinians in the northern Gaza Strip to attend medical centers to get children under the age of 10 years old vaccinated against polio. There have been breaks in the fighting to permit a vaccination campaign. The UN hopes to vaccinate 640,000 children in Gaza, the territory's first polio case in around 25 years, was recently reported. UN officials said the campaign in the southern and central Gaza Strip had so far reached more than half of the children there needing the vaccine. 4 weeks later, the children must get a second vaccination to complete the treatment. Toma, the UN official, said 450,000 of the children targeted by the campaign had been vaccinated. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Some top universities in the United States are reporting drops in the number of Black students in their incoming classes. At other colleges, including Princeton University and Yale University, the share of Black students changed little. This fall's class is the first admitted since a Supreme Court ruling barred affirmative action in higher education. Several schools have seen changes in numbers of Asian, Hispanic, and Native American students, but trends are still unclear. Experts and colleges say it will take years to measure the full effect of the ruling. The end of affirmative action is not the only possible reason for the changing numbers. Some colleges are changing requirements, making test results more important. Earlier this year, there was a problem with the federal government's college financial aid process. On September 5th, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, or UNC, reported drops in enrollment among Black, Hispanic, and Native American students in its incoming class. It was one of the colleges at the center of the Supreme Court case. The population of Black students dropped nearly 3 percentage points this fall to 7.8%. Hispanic student enrollment fell from 10.8% to 10.1%, while the incoming Native American population fell 0.5 percentage point to 1.1%. According to the university. The incoming Asian student population rose 1 percentage point to 25.8%. The share of white students at 63.8% hardly changed. Rochelle Feldman is UNC's vice provost for enrollment. She said the delay in the student aid process was another possible influence on the enrollment numbers. "We are committed to following the new law," Feldman said. She also said the school administration is committed to making sure all North Carolina students know that they are welcome at UNC and can succeed there. Other universities reported sharp drops in Black student enrollment. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, said the percentage of incoming Black students fell from 15% to 5%. Another Massachusetts school, Amherst College, reported the percentage fill from 11% to 3%. At Tufts University in Massachusetts, the drop in the share of Black students was smaller, from 7.3% to 4.7%. At Yale, the University of Virginia, and Princeton, the change year over year was less than a percentage point. Changes in enrollment for other demographic groups were more mixed. At MIT, for example, the percentage of Asian students increased from 40% to 47%. However, its Hispanic and Latino percentage dropped from 16% to 11%. And MIT's percentage of white students stayed about the same. But at Yale, the percentage of Asian students fell from 30% to 24%. White students at Yale went from 42% of the class to 46%. Hispanic and Latino students saw an increased representation of 1 percentage point. Colleges have started looking for other ways to preserve the diversity they say is critical to university life. J.T. Duck is head of admissions at Tufts University in Massachusetts. He said the school would work with community organizations to reach underrepresented, low-income students and students whose parents did not graduate from college. He suggested that people not worry too much about year-to-year changes in enrollment. At UNC, Vice Provost Feldman said, "The university wants to make sure anyone from any background knows they can earn their way here." Catherine Meyer works at the Brookings Institution. She said it is hard to tell which policy change is having a greater effect. But so far, she said, the drops in underrepresented minority students are smaller than in previous cases. California passed a ban on affirmative action in 1995, and Michigan did so in 2014. But since those bans, Meyer said, colleges have developed more effective, non-race-based ways of recruiting and enrolling a diverse class. I'm Jill Robbins.
Jill Robbins joins me now to talk more about this week's education report. Hi, Jill. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
My pleasure, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
This week's report looked at changes that some colleges and universities have noted among their incoming students. As you explained, this fall's class is the first to be admitted since a U.S. High Court decision barred affirmative action in higher education. First, can you briefly explain the idea of affirmative action?
Sure. It is choosing a candidate for admission to a school or for a job based partly on their race. The schools used to do this to have a class that was about the same percentage of different races as the general population.
So, as you say in the report, schools can no longer use race when deciding which students to admit. But they can still try to find more diverse students to accept in other ways. How do they do that?
One way is to not just look at grades or test scores. They can look at the high school or secondary school where the student attended school. If it is in a disadvantaged area, they will consider that when looking at other information.
What do you mean by disadvantaged area?
It is an area where the average income is low, schools are not as well funded, and there are few job opportunities. One thing schools can look at is how many students in a school get a free lunch provided by the government. Another is the average income level of the neighborhood.
I see. How about working with the secondary schools directly?
That's another good way to learn about outstanding students. They can invite students from disadvantaged backgrounds to attend college fairs and learn more about their choice of college or university.
Sometimes students write a statement about their life as part of their college application. Can schools use that?
Yes, some schools have that as one possible question. How has race affected your life?
All right. Thanks for joining me, Jill, and thanks so much for answering my questions.
Always a pleasure, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
On tomorrow's podcast, Brian Lynn brings us the week's technology report. He takes a look at the launch of Apple's latest phone, the iPhone 16. Apple says the model was built with the latest artificial intelligence technology. The company announced 4 new iPhone 16 models during a launch event this week. You can learn more about the features and capabilities of the iPhone 16 tomorrow by visiting our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. There will also be a quiz to test your understanding of Brian's report.
Mateo.
And my name is Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
You're listening to the Learning English Podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our series, Let's Learn English. The series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
The more you watch Let's Learn English, the more you will see that Anna is interested in many things. That's why Washington is a good place for her to live, because there are so many interesting things she can see and do.
That's true. There are a lot of interesting things in D.C. But Anna can still get bored from time to time, like in Lesson 13. Let's listen.
Hello! In Washington, D.C., there are many things to do on a Sunday afternoon. I like to exercise, I like to shop, I like to garden. But today, I feel bored. When I feel bored, I always look for something unusual to do.
Anna talks about feeling bored, but then she does find something interesting. she finds a birthday party for the famous English playwright William Shakespeare.
There are many things to do in Washington, D.C. Some usual, some unusual. Today, I am not bored because it is William Shakespeare's birthday.
Sometimes it's the unusual things in Washington that help make it interesting.
That's right. Anna never stays bored for very long.
And, of course, if something is interesting, it's not going to be boring.
And what's boring to one person might be interesting to another person.
That's true. And I hope none of our listeners think our podcast is boring.
How could that even be possible? But let's do this to keep our listeners interested. Today, Andrew and I are going to say a few sentences that are grammatically correct in English, but native speakers almost never say them. However, we have heard people learning English make a mistake by trying to say them.
And we want you to try to answer this question. Why don't native speakers say these things, even though there's nothing technically wrong with the grammar? See if you can spot the problem. Here are our examples.
Example 1. I love watching Lionel Messi play soccer. When I watch his matches, I feel so exciting.
Example 2. I am really boring in the afternoon when I am waiting for the bus.
So what was the problem with those sentences? If you said the problem was the ing endings on exciting and boring, you are correct. Now let's hear the correct version of the sentences.
Example 1. I love watching Lionel Messi play soccer. When I watch his matches, I feel so excited.
Example 2. I am really bored in the afternoon when I am waiting for the bus.
Here's the key idea. The ing ending refers to the source, the thing that makes or produces the feeling in the person. And the ed describes how you feel as a result of the source. In the two examples, the soccer matches and waiting for the bus are the source of the feelings.
Right. So the match is exciting, but the person who watches is excited. And waiting for the bus is boring, but the person who waits feels bored.
So if someone says, I feel so exciting, that means the person thinks they are making other people feel excited. Someone would only say that in special situations.
So a performer, like a famous singer, could actually say, I try to be an exciting performer, because it's their job to make other people enjoy their music or their shows. But that's a special situation, because they are indeed the source of the excitement. The rest of the people watching the show, feel excited.
Now that you know that we use ing for what produces the feeling and ed for how people feel inside, we're going to use this in discussion. Jill, could you share an experience you've had that was very moving?
I watched a performance this weekend that was called 200 Years of Soul Music, with a storyteller and musicians and singers moving from African drumming through spirituals to hip-hop music. Through it all, the performers made a connection to African roots of the rhythms. I felt moved by the new understandings they opened up for the audience.
I think our listeners can understand that a moving experience is one that has a big effect on our emotions or feelings. So that's why you said, I felt moved.
Now here's a question for you, Andrew. What for you would be an intimidating situation? And have you ever been in one?
That's a good question. Well, here's one that comes to mind. I've always wanted to learn how to surf. It looks like so much fun to ride the waves on the surfboard in the ocean. So I've tried it a few times, but I have to say, when you're in the water and you see a wave rise up like a wall that's about to break onto your head, it's intimidating. The ocean is powerful.
So you felt intimidated?
I did, but not too much. I kept trying.
And did you ever stand up on the surfboard? You know, I went surfing once, and I thought just lying on the surfboard through a big wave was a big accomplishment.
I see what you mean. I did stand up, but only on smaller waves that were not so intimidating.
Intimidation is the noun form of this word. To intimidate means to produce fear or threaten.
You're listening to the Learning English Podcast. Jill, here's a question for you and our listeners about Anna. What word does she usually say when she is excited about something?
Oh, that's an easy one. She says, awesome, when she sees something interesting or exciting. Let's listen.
What is going on here?
It's a big birthday party for the writer William Shakespeare.
This is a party for William Shakespeare?
Yes!
Awesome!
Awesome!
It would be interesting to count the number of times she says that in the series.
Well, maybe I'll let you try that. But before we end today's podcast, let's read a little chant about the words bored and boring. Are you ready?
Ready.
Who's bored?
I'm bored.
You're bored.
He's bored.
She's bored.
They're bored.
In fact, we're all bored.
Guess who's boring?
I'm not boring.
You're not boring.
She's not boring.
They're not boring.
And we're not boring.
I guess that means that nobody's boring.
But I'm bored.
You're boring?
No, I said I'm bored.
Well, then let's learn with VOA. They're not boring.
All right.
Jill, that was a fun chant you made. I'll bet it kept our listeners interested.
I hope so. We don't want to be boring.
No, we don't. But you know what? A little boredom is okay. Sometimes we just need to rest and do nothing.
My cat is very good at that.
Yes, cats are the champions when it comes to relaxation. So, whether you found our podcast interesting, boring, relaxing, or even confusing, thanks for listening to the Learning English Podcast. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.